Gone. Han turned back to Fel.
So why are you watching us?
Because we're bait, Leia surmised. She turned to Fel. Your assignment is to hunt down Alima and make sure she can't restart the Dark Nest, isn't it? That's my intention, yes, Fel said. But not my assignment. I'm no longer with the Ascendancy military.
Han frowned. If you're not on assignment, what are you doing here?
I have nothing to hide.
Fel pretended to take another long drink from his mug.
I'm an exile.
Exile?
Leia asked.
Why?
As you know, I guaranteed Lobaka's parole at Korribu. When he participated in the attack on Supply Depot Thrago, my family became liable for the damage he inflicted on the Ascendancy from that point on. As I'm sure you know, Wookiees can do a lot of damage, especially Jedi Wookiees. When my family couldn't cover the expenses, I was forced to leave the Ascendancy.
Leia's chin dropped.
Jagged, I'm sorry. If there's anything we can do...
There isn't, Fel said a little sharply. There's nothing any Jedi or Solo can do that would change the decree of the ruling families.
I know things look bad now, but give it some time,
Leia said.
After you find Alima, I'm sure the Ascendancy will reconsider.
And you don't know the Ascendancy,
Fel snapped.
Finding Alima will redeem my family's honor and give it the means to rebuild its fortune. But my situation will remain the same. If ever I return to the Ascendancy, my entire family will be dishonored.
Well, whatever we can do.
Han didn't like the tone Fel was taking with Leia, but the kid did have a pretty good reason to be angry.
Use us as bait all you want. Everyone else does.
He cast a meaningful glance over at Nashta, who was still slumped against the wall, staring off into space.
I am using you as bait.
Fel pushed his mug to the table center and started to rise.
And now, if you'll excuse me.
Not so fast.
Han took a quick glance around and was dismayed to notice half a dozen pairs of eyes turned in their direction.
There's one thing about your story that bothers me. There's no way you found us on your own.
Actually, it wasn't difficult at all, Fel said. The Hollow News is filled with stories about your defection to Corellia.
This isn't Corellia, Han said.
True, but I happened to see a communique from Admiral Buatu.
Fel glanced nervously around the cantina, then continued.
He was convinced that Corellia's next move would be to attempt to persuade Hapes to enter the war on her side.
You're lying,
Han said, with more hope than conviction.
Nobody sees that kind of communique.
There are plenty of officers in the Galactic Alliance who value honor as highly as the Chiss,
Fel said.
Is it too much to believe that one of them would assist me with the hunt for Alima Rar? Especially since it was the Alliance who asserted that she was dead.
He's got a good point,
Leia said to Han. Han remained suspicious.
It's still a long way from that message to Talkor Station.
Not as long as you think, Captain Solo,
Fel said.
You two have known the Queen Mother since she was a child. Who else was Corellia going to send?
Which gets you halfway here,
Leia pointed out.
But nothing you've said explains how you went from Hapes to Talkor Station.
That was the simplest part of all.
Fel glanced across the cantina.
I followed him.
Han followed Fel's gaze to the bartender, who was pretending to wipe down the counter, but watching them.
Of course,
Leia said quietly.
Hapen Security.
Fel nodded.
His team departed the Fountain Palace a few hours after your attack on the Queen Mother. Now you'll have to excuse me. This fight really won't be any of my concern.
Fel started toward the exit, leaving Han and his companions to locate the security team. It was hardly difficult. They were the ones trying too hard to mind their own business, appearing more interested in their drinks or conversation than what was happening around them. Han quickly counted a standard surveillance team of 6 agents, including the bartender. They were scattered around the cantina near the exits, with a clear line of sight to the Solos, and well-positioned to cut off any escape attempt. It took longer to locate the team leader. Han was expecting a woman to be in charge, and initially paid no attention to the scrawny fellow seated alone at the end of the bar.
but the second time he looked, the man was studying their half-filled glasses and muttering into his drink.
We just ran out of time.
As Han spoke, he was swinging his legs out from beneath the table and dropping his hands toward his blaster holster. If he wanted to convince Nashta that he and Leia were for real, without a lot of bloodshed, he had to act now.
I think they're mad because we don't like the drinks.
The leader looked away and muttered into his drink more urgently. Han flipped the power setting on his blaster to stun, then drew and fired twice without standing. The first bolt only grazed the leader's abdomen, melting a dark line across the front of his tunic and causing him to hunch over in pain. The second caught him full in the flank, knocking him to the floor in a convulsing mass. In the instant of stunned silence that followed, Han thought his plan might succeed, that he and Leia and Nashta might actually disappear into the station's tangled corridors before the surveillance team recovered from its shock. Then he stood, his knees went weak, and his head began to spin, and he had to brace himself on the table. Han! Pulling her lightsaber from beneath her robe, she moved. Leia rose and started to reach for him, then had to put a hand down to catch herself.
Whoa! Strong stuff.
Yeah,
Han said. The security team was already recovering from its shock and drawing weapons.
Really hits you.
Renatil, a bounty hunter favorite,
explained Nashta. Suddenly she seemed alert and ready to fight, clearly a result of the force trance she had entered.
You don't notice it until you try to stand. Then you fall flat on your face.
Thanks for the warning,
Han griped, starting to feel even more queasy and dizzy. Half the security team, two tall, burly men and a stony-eyed woman with high cheeks and thin brows, were already bringing blaster pistols to bear and shouting orders to surrender. Leia's lightsaber came to life with a sharp snap hiss, but Nashta showed no sign of rising to go with the Solos. Han frowned at her.
You coming?
Not yet.
She drew a long, barreled blaster from her thigh holster.
I hate being drugged.
Then you'd better come with us now.
Han said. He stepped in front of her, extending a hand as though to help, but actually trying to block her line of fire.
If you think this is bad, wait until the Hapen interrogators.
Nashta raised her blaster and squeezed the trigger, sending a bolt of blue heat screeling past Han's ear. He cried out in astonishment, then turned and saw the bartender tumbling away behind the bar, a T-21 repeating blaster flying from his hands and a wisp of smoke rising between his eyes. Han dropped his head.
I really wish you hadn't done that. Now things are going to get...
Before he could finish, the cantina broke into an uproar of shouting voices and screaming weapons. Leia's lightsaber growled as she brought her blade around to defend.
Han! She yelled. A little help?
Han whirled around to find Leia frantically batting aside full-power blaster bolts, doing her best to avoid hurting anyone by directing the attacks up into the web of ducts that served as the cantina ceiling. Keeping his own blaster set to stun, Han began to return fire, concentrating on a trio of agents between them and the exit. He dropped one, and Leia started toward the exit, staggering and weaving. Blaster bolts began to pour in from behind. Han spun around to lay covering fire, but the cantina slipped into a Renatil-laced spin, and he could see nothing but whirling blurs of color. He pointed his blaster into the stream of blue bolts and held the trigger down, then cried out in shock as something hot slammed into his shoulder. Han was on the floor before he knew he was falling, his nostrils burning with the smell of scorched flesh, one side of his body throbbing in searing pain. To his surprise, he was still holding his blaster pistol, pouring fire toward a pair of amorphous forms that were fast taking the shape of charging security agents.
Han!
Leia cried.
Are you...
He'll be fine,
Nashta called, finally deciding to help out. She slipped off the bench and knelt at Han's side. She fired twice, and both agents went down with scorch holes in their faces.
Perhaps I believe your story after all.
Too late, Han groaned. If we get out of here, you're on your own.
Oh, you're angry?
Nashta patted him on the cheek, then turned to face Leia's direction.
How cute.
She fired a dozen times, and suddenly the only sound in the cantina was the drone of Leia's lightsaber. Han rolled to his knees, nearly passing out from the pain in the Renatil, and spun around. Leia was standing 2 meters ahead, holding her lightsaber at her side and staring at the motionless bodies of several Hapen security agents. When it grew obvious they were all dead,
Leia deactivated her lightsaber and knelt beside Han.
How bad?
I'll live. We got other things to worry about.
Han shifted his eyes toward Nashta, who was still kneeling on the floor beside him.
That was just a surveillance team. But...
Han winced in pain as Leia pulled him to his feet.
They had to have called for backup the minute they identified us,
she said, finishing his sentence.
You're right. We have to get out of here.
Before we meet my contact?
Nashta asked.
What contact?
Han demanded.
You were just testing us.
But Nashta was already staggering toward the back of the cantina, clearly feeling the effects of the Rhenatil even more than the Solos. Though most of the bystanders were evacuating as quickly as possible, a classy-looking brunette in a red Syntex vest was standing just inside the rear exit, her eyes darting around nervously as Nashta approached. Han led the way after Nashta, grimacing inside as he and Leia stepped around wounded bystanders and motionless security agents. By the time Han and Leia arrived, Nashta was already talking to the woman.
Did you come alone?
She was asking.
That was the agreement.
The woman eyed the Solos and frowned.
For both of us. Those agents just prove that the Solos are on your side,
Nashta said, waving a hand at the dead Hapens.
And I needed a ride. Your assassination plan was a setup.
That's impossible,
the woman retorted.
If you think the Council is going to accept the blame for your failure...
Nashta placed a hand over the woman's mouth, then slammed her against a durasteel wall and leaned in close.
It's not a matter of what the Council will accept, Lady Morwan.
Nashta's voice was cold and menacing.
It is a matter of what I am going to do.
The woman's eyes slid toward Leia as though seeking help.
She's right, Lady Morwan, Leia said. They were waiting for us. Someone on your Council is a spy.
Morwan's eyes widened in alarm, and Han had to force himself not to smile. After a moment, Morwan nodded, and Nashta removed her hand.
What are you going to do?
Morwan asked.
Spy or no spy, the Council has paid you a Hutt's treasure. They expect you to earn your fee.
I will. My way.
Morwan considered this for a moment, then said,
Very well. But the Council wants you to attend to the Chumda first. The child?
Nashta frowned.
What about the Queen Mother?
After,
Morwan said.
We will always be able to find the Queen Mother. But now that we have made our intentions clear, the Chumda will be sent into hiding.
Nashta did not even hesitate.
I require another fee.
Of course, once you have eliminated the Chumda,
Morwan said.
Your first fee will be payment for that.
Nashta considered this, then nodded.
Agreed.
She stepped back and smoothed Morwan's vest.
What kind of vessel did you come in?
A Batag skiff.
Morwan lowered her brow, clearly confused.
Your instructions said to come in something small and anonymous.
And you did well,
Nashta said.
Give me the security code.
Morwan frowned.
The security code?
I need transport.
Nashta glanced at Han.
The Falcon is not very anonymous, even with the false transponder codes.
But how will I...
You are not my problem.
Nashta jabbed her thumb into Morwan's larynx.
The codes.
Alephon!
Morwan said.
That's the hatch code.
Nashta eased the pressure on Morwan's throat.
And the pilot's code?
Remela.
Nashta smiled.
Was that so hard?
She lowered her hand and turned to Han and Leia.
I trust we won't meet again. I suspect it would be more pleasant for me than you.
That's it?
Han asked.
You're just going?
Nashta thought for a moment, then raised her brow as though remembering something.
Ah, the problem with your son.
She pulled a data chip from her utility belt and passed it to Han.
Contact instructions. Leave a message when you're ready.
She started through the exit, then stopped and looked back, smiling.
I hope you will contact me. I'm looking forward to working with you on that.
She disappeared out the exit, leaving Han and Leia to stand there fuming. Leia slipped a hand under Han's arm.
Come on, Flyboy. We'd better get you back to the Falcon and take a look at that blaster burn.
She turned him toward the opposite side of the cantina and started away, then suddenly stopped and looked back over her shoulder, as though she had just remembered something.
Forgive my rudeness, Lady Morwan. Can we give you a lift somewhere? Please.
Morwan started after them, not even attempting to hide her relief.
I was afraid you'd never ask.
Aboard the Millennium Falcon, in the transitory mists.
After a hasty departure from Telcor Station, the Falcon emerged from her first hyperspace jump in a pocket of real space listed on the charts as Knotholes. As far as Leia could tell, the name was a reference to the dozens of narrow hyperspace lanes that punched through the black depths of transitory mists, creating a torn curtain tableau of jagged, star-filled shapes. Han, who was seated in the co-pilot's seat while Leia did the flying, pointed toward a crescent of stars hanging on the starboard side of the viewport.
That way.
Han was sweating with pain and unable to move his wounded shoulder, but he refused to go back to the medical bay until they were a safe distance away from Telcor Station. He glanced back toward Lady Morwan, who was sitting behind Leia at the navigator station, then added,
We're heading back to the interior?
Correct,
Morwan replied.
I hope that won't be an inconvenience, Princess.
Not at all.
Leia turned the yoke in the direction Han had indicated and caught him watching the S-thread display, no doubt checking signal strength.
We're entirely at your service. We've been operating on our own initiative since the first assassination attempt failed.
Assassination?
Morwan's voice held a definite tone of remorse as she repeated the word.
Depose sounds so much better. But I suppose assassination is more honest, isn't it? If the Council didn't want the Queen Mother killed, it wouldn't have hired Aura Singh.
Before Leia could ask if that was Nashta's real name, Han twisted around to look squarely at Morwan.
Don't tell me you're growing a conscience all of a sudden.
I'm as dedicated to the Consortium's independence as you are to Corellius.
Morwan's voice had grown just cold enough to show her displeasure at being questioned by a man.
That doesn't mean I relish the deaths of the Queen Mother and the Chunda.
Of course not, Leia said. Decisions like these are never easy.
Perhaps I can be of some assistance,
C-3PO offered.
If you're talking about the woman who accompanied us on our escape from Fountain Palace, I have some data suggesting she couldn't possibly be Aura Singh. According to the records Master Skywalker found aboard the Chuon 4, Aura Singh was a 9-year-old Jedi trainee who was captured by pirates more than 75 standard years ago. She seems to have felt rather betrayed by the Jedi Order's failure to rescue her, because she returned years later as a bounty hunter who specialized in hunting and killing Jedi. She was finally captured by Jedi Isla Sakura, then imprisoned in the penal colony on Uvo 4. There is no record of her release.
Maybe that's because there are no records from Uvo 4, Han replied. When the Yuuzhan Vong leveled the place, they were incinerated, along with the guards, the confinement domes, and probably most of the prisoners.
I'm curious about how you chose Aura, Leia said. She's hardly a well-known killer of Jedi anymore.
And even if she was, this isn't the kind of job you'd look up an 80-year-old woman for, Han pointed out.
Actually, she found me, Morwan explained. When the Heritage Council assigned me to find someone capable of removing the Queen Mother from her throne, I began by assembling a history of known Jedi deaths. When I came across the story of Aura Singh, I decided to research her as well, hoping to learn something that would help me choose my assassin wisely. I must have tripped an alarm gate. Singh showed up a couple of weeks later demanding to know why I was investigating her. After that, it was hire or die.
Sounds like you didn't have much of a choice, Han said sympathetically. I hope that doesn't mean you're having second thoughts now.
I'm not.
Morwan's tone grew defensive.
But I don't see why you are so concerned about my feelings, Captain Solo. I'm not even a member of the Council. The coup will go on no matter how I feel.
Okay, don't get all touchy on me.
Han turned forward again, grunting as the motion aggravated his wound.
I'm just trying to figure out who set us up at the palace, that's all.
It wasn't me.
Morwan stood and stepped between the pilots and co-pilot seats. then gently slipped a hand under Han's injured arm. Time for you to go to medbay.
Not yet.
Han tried to pull his arm free, but managed only to cause himself so much pain that he gasped.
Not until we're in the interior.
By the time we reach the interior, you may have an infection,
Morwan said, clearly unaccustomed to hearing no from a mere man. She continued to pull, slowly drawing Han to his feet.
And the way your arm won't move isn't good. The blaster wound may have fused. Are you insane?
This last remark Morwan screeched as the barrel of Han's blaster suddenly appeared beneath her nose.
No means no,
Han warned. Didn't your mother ever teach you that? Morwan released his arm, but refused to back down.
You aren't that tough, Captain Solo. When the numb spray wears off, you'll be screaming in pain.
Probably, Leia said. And you'll be sitting right there doing it. I've met Rontos who aren't as stubborn.
Scowling at Han's blaster, Leia assumed the high-pitched voice a mother might use with a child.
Han, dear, why don't you put that nasty blaster away? Maybe C-3PO will take the lady back to the medbay and help her find some Bacta salve and bandages, and then you can stay in the cockpit with the grown-ups.
All right. You don't have to get all sarcastic on me.
Han holstered his blaster, then dropped back into the co-pilot seat and winced.
I was just trying to make a point.
You've succeeded beyond your wildest dreams, Captain Solo,
Morwan said.
Next time, please feel free to yell.
She turned away and followed C-3PO down the access corridor. Once the protocol droid's metallic steps had died away, Han leaned closer to Leia and spoke in a soft voice.
Once we know who she's working for...
We need to access the holonet and see that our intelligence reaches Tenel Ka,
Leia finished.
I know.
Good, because we might not have much...
Time,
Leia finished again.
I know, Han. Maybe you should activate the medbay monitoring cam.
Han lowered his brow.
Not yet. No one's sticking me in the medbay until we've handled...
It's not you I want to watch,
Leia said.
What if Lady Morwan isn't using her real name?
Oh, yeah.
Han settled back into the co-pilot's chair and activated the medbay cam.
I guess a picture would be kind of useful.
Kind of,
she said in a wry voice. Given even a moderately clear image, Leia felt certain that the Hapen Intelligence Service, one of the finest in the galaxy, would be able to identify Morwan and her superiors. On the display, Morwan leaned out from behind C-3PO, presenting a clear profile as she reached for the salve drawer. Han captured the image, then another of her full face as she turned to ask 3PO a question. The droid pointed at another drawer, and from this one Morwan pulled a sonic scalpel. Han sat straight up.
What's that for?
Probably to cut away dead tissue, Leia said.
Up here?
You aren't giving her much choice,
Leia said.
I wouldn't worry about it. From what I've seen so far, she knows her combat medicine.
On Han's display, Morwan picked up the supply tray and started forward again. C-3PO's metallic steps rang up the access corridor, punctuating the sharp tones of Morwan's indignant voice.
I'm a field surgeon by training, 3PO,
she was saying.
I think I can remember how to use an irrigation bulb.
I'm certain you can. It's really quite simple as long as you use the proper antibiotic.
A moment later, Morwan led C-3PO onto the flight deck. Leia nonchalantly turned her gaze forward again.
Did I hear you telling 3PO you're a field surgeon?
Was,
Morwan corrected.
I moved on after the Kuribu escapade.
Leia's brow rose.
You were at Kuribu?
The Battle of Kuribu had been short but vicious, the result of a misunderstanding during the Dark Nest crisis between a Hapen commander and his Chiss counterpart.
Aboard the Kendall?
Morwan hesitated before answering, just long enough to suggest that she realized she had given away more information about herself than was probably wise.
As a matter of fact, I did serve aboard the Kendall,
she finally said.
How did you know?
I recognized you from when we transported the Killix,
Leia lied. The truth was she had just tossed out the name of the Hapen flagship, hoping to trick Morwan into revealing the name of the vessel she'd served on.
So you served with the Lesson Gray? I wouldn't say with.
The pitch of Morwan's voice was a touch higher than normal, but it was enough to confirm the ripple of anxiety that Leia felt through the Force.
I wasn't part of the command staff.
Lady Morwan, didn't anyone ever tell you it's impossible to lie to a Jedi?
Leia caught Han's gaze in the canopy reflection and held it, making sure he understood the significance of the question. Hapen officers tended to draw their command staffs from their own houses, so chances were good that they had just identified the coup ringleader.
But don't worry. Your Duchess' secret is safe with us.
Yeah, Han said. Who are we gonna tell?
Aboard Jade Shadow, approaching planet Hapes.
Luke woke with the same troubled spirit he did every time he dreamed of the face. His chest heavy with the weight of a duty unanswered. His stomach churning with premonitions of failure. The face always came to him half-hidden beneath a raised hood, betraying only a hint of its appearance. A mouth frozen into a lopsided grimace of anguish. A jagged brow fixed in a permanent scowl of disapproval. A pair of ebony eyes shining with perpetual malice. He never saw enough of the face to know whether it was the same one each time, but the emotions always came in order. Pain, condemnation, spite. Luke had no idea what the pattern meant, but he felt sure it was a storm warning. A beckoning whistle sounded from the far side of the Jade Shadow's elegant master cabin, where R2-D2 stood in the hatchway, rocking back and forth on his support arms. Luke allowed himself the fantasy of using the Force to push the little droid back into the corridor and closing his eyes again. Since learning of Lumaya's involvement with GAG, he had been so worried about Ben that he had barely been able to sleep. And even when he did, he was so troubled by dreams that he never woke feeling refreshed. R2-D2 let out an impatient bleat, then extended his charging arm and started across the floor. All right, no need for the Ronto prod. Luke swung his feet around and sat on the edge of the bunk. I'm awake. R2-D2 issued a doubtful whistle, but stopped and retracted the charging arm as Luke pulled on his boots. The steady thrumming in the deck suggested that the Shadow had emerged from hyperspace and was decelerating hard, presumably on its final approach to the planet Hapes. Once his boots were fastened, Luke grabbed his robe and started forward through the observation salon. The cratered faces of two silver moons were sliding past outside the Shadow's starboard viewport. Outside the other, the ion tails of half a dozen starships were crawling across the star-flecked velvet. In the distance, a huge white motionless disk, no doubt one of the battle dragons that would be screening Hapes after the attempt on Tenel Ka's life. Luke continued forward onto the flight deck, where the cloud-mottled disk of the planet itself hung dead ahead. Its sparkling oceans and forested islands were as beautiful as ever. But Luke was more interested in the thumb-sized wedge slowly drifting toward the center of the canopy. Instead of the customary white, the Star Destroyer's hull was matte black, with the telltale dome of a gravity well generator bulging beneath its belly and a cloaking cone rising midway down its spine. It was the first time Luke had seen the new GAG Star Destroyer. He didn't much like it, and he really didn't like that it had been named the Anakin Solo, after his dead nephew. A canopy section opaqued into a mirror, and Mara's face appeared in the reflection, looking focused and worried.
We just received a very interesting holo recording, she said.
From Jason?
Mara shook her head.
From Han, relayed over the holonet from the Jedi Temple.
Really? Luke lifted his brow.
Explaining how they're being impersonated by clones and weren't even on Hapes when someone tried to kill Tenel Ka? Because that's the only thing that makes sense.
Not exactly, Mara said. And it only gets more confusing. Han and Leia are spying on the coup plotters.
Spying? Luke frowned.
They've learned the identity of one of the ringleaders, Mara said. Han wants us to pass the information to Tenel Ka as soon as possible.
Luke looked out the front of the canopy, where the Anakin's silhouette now hung dead ahead of the Shadow.
Then why are we heading for the Anakin? I tried to relay the message to Tenel Ka. My signal was routed to Prince Isolder. He suggested I try again after we were aboard the Anakin. The Anakin? Luke closed his eyes and expanded his Force awareness toward the Star Destroyer. It did not take long to find the familiar, level-headed presence of Tenel Ka. What's she doing there? Protecting Alana, I'm sure. I doubt she needed Han to tell her there was a traitor on her staff, or that her daughter is just as much a target as she is. So she turns to Jason, Luke said. I guess that makes sense. Mara flicked her gaze toward the reflection of the co-pilot's chair.
Take a seat. You look like you've been wrestling rancors in your sleep.
I wish. Luke slipped into the co-pilot's seat behind her.
It was the face again.
Mara's expression grew serious.
Jason?
Luke shrugged. Maybe.
I never see it clearly enough. Then you can't be sure.
It was male, Luke replied. He could feel through the Force how worried Mara was about Ben, how alarmed she was by the relationship they had discovered between GAG and Lumaya. So he did not understand why she still refused to see what was happening to Jason. Who else could it be?
That's the point, Luke,
Mara said.
We don't know. So far, the only connection we have between Jason and Lumaya is some evidence suggesting she's been working with GAG. And you don't find that alarming? Like a Gundark in a petting zoo,
Mara replied. She turned her gaze back to the Anakin Solo, which was steadily growing in the center of the canopy.
But there's a big difference between suspicion and fact. What if Lumaya wasn't working for GAG? What if someone in GAG is working for her?
You think she subverted one of Jason's subordinates?
I think we need to be open to the possibility,
Mara corrected.
You don't like what Jason's doing with GAG, so you're predisposed to assume the worst. All I'm saying is we can't let emotion color our judgments.
Luke fell silent a moment, then let out a long breath. You're right. Maybe I'm assuming the worst because I don't like Jason's methods. But your advice is good for both of us, you know. I think you blind yourself to what's happening with Jason because he's the one who convinced Ben not to hide from the Force. Mara nodded.
Guilty as charged,
she said, keeping her eyes forward.
That's why we have to work together on this, Skywalker. We need to keep each other honest. And if we don't like what we find, we're going to need each other more than ever.
Her tone made Luke frown.
What are you saying? You know what I mean, Skywalker,
she replied.
If you're right, if Jason has been making a fool of me, he won't be easy to handle. It'll take both of us.
Luke raised his brow, surprised by the ice in Mara's voice.
What about that sense of certainty you experienced back at the sparring arena? You said we had to let Ben follow his own path, that you thought the Force had drawn him to Jason for a reason. I still think that,
Mara said.
But we have a path to follow, too. Maybe this is where all our paths converge, where Ben's path finally joins ours.
Only Ben's? Luke asked. What about Jason?
If I'm wrong, Jason won't have a path,
Mara said.
We'll have to end it.
Now I think you're the one who's assuming the worst, he said.
I'm worried about Jason, but I'm not ready to kill him. Then you're not being realistic,
Mara said.
If he is working with Lumaya, we won't have a choice. I won't let him take Ben down that path with him.
Of course not. But whatever Jason has become, it's due to what happened after he was captured by the Yuuzhan Vong, and I'm the one who sent him on that mission. Luke paused.
I won't give up on Jason just because he's lost his way. If he has fallen under Lumaya's sway, I'm going to bring him back under mine.
The comm channel squawked as a traffic controller issued approach clearance for the Shadow. For the next few minutes, as the dark mass of the Anakin Solo continued to swell in the canopy, they were kept busy making course corrections and providing identity verifications. Finally, when the Shadow had drawn so close they could see nothing ahead except the dark tiers of the Star Destroyer's blocky superstructure, the traffic controller gave them the clearance to berth in the command hangar.
Mara dropped beneath the sky of black durasteel that was the Anakin Solo's belly, then angled aft to a small launching bay defended by two quad-cannon laser turrets. She used the attitude thrusters to rise through the barrier shield into the hangar, where a set of beacon lights led her to the designated berth. No sooner had the shadow set down than an honor guard of 20 GAG troopers emerged from an access hatch. They arrayed themselves into two columns and came to attention facing each other. And a moment later, Jason appeared and strode down the aisle between them. A black cape billowed from the shoulders of his black colonel's uniform. "Oh, boy," Mara said, unbuckling her crash webbing. "Does he know who he looks like?" "He does if he bothered to look in a mirror." Luke was disappointed to see that their son was not accompanying Jason, but hardly surprised. He had not felt Ben's presence when he reached out to see if Tenel Ka was aboard the Anakin Solo. Once all systems had been placed on standby, they went aft and found Jason waiting at the bottom of the boarding ramp. His face was gray and furrowed, and the purple circles beneath his eyes suggested that he had not been sleeping well, if at all. He bowed first to Mara, then to Luke. "Master Skywalker, welcome aboard the Anakin Solo." Jason's voice sounded genuinely warm, though it was impossible to read his true feelings. "What a pleasant surprise."
"You might want to reserve judgment on that," Mara said. "We need to talk."
"Of course." Jason remained at the foot of the boarding ramp, making no move to allow them any farther aboard. "Is something wrong?"
"You'd be safe to assume that," Luke said. "Where's Ben?"
"On a mission," Jason replied.
"He's in a calm blackout zone at the moment, but if it's important, I could dispatch..." "We'll talk about that later, in private."
Luke had to struggle to keep his voice even. With Lamaya on the loose, he did not like the thought of Ben being on a mission anywhere.
"First, we need to speak with the Queen Mother. We have an urgent message for her."
Jason's eyes widened with surprise.
"Tenel Ka?"
"Now, Jason," Luke said.
"And we'll need a holoprojector."
Jason let out his breath.
"Very well."
He stepped aside and let them and R2-D2 up the aisle between the honor guard. They passed through a hatchway into a small foyer, where four GAG troopers stood guard over a bank of lift tubes. One tube was labeled Bridge. Jason turned to Luke.
"After you."
Luke waved R2-D2 into the lift ahead of him, then followed without replying. His stomach sank as the tube walls blurred past. A moment later he came to a stop and stepped out into a sparse durasteel anteroom, where another detail of GAG sentries stood guard over several hatchways leading into a maze of blue-white corridors. Jason stepped out of the lift behind Luke and spoke to an ebony-skinned trooper standing directly across from them.
"Sergeant Darb, take an escort detail to the Situation Room and inform the Queen Mother that the Master Skywalker would like to speak with her. We'll be waiting in the briefing cabin."
"Very well, Colonel."
The sergeant saluted sharply and left to obey. Jason turned away from the flight deck, leading R2-D2 and the Skywalkers down a short corridor into a state-of-the-art briefing cabin, with a large holocom unit at one end of a sunken speaking stage. Jason sat down and motioned the Skywalkers toward a pair of nearby seats.
"There's a beverage menu in the arm display, if you'd like something to drink."
Luke remained standing.
"Thanks,
but we're not thirsty."
"I see."
Jason's expression turned from pleasant to disappointed, and he shifted to the edge of his seat.
"Then why don't we get whatever is bothering you out in the open?"
"At the moment," Luke said, "I'm interested in where Ben is."
"He's aboard a reconnaissance skiff," Jason replied.
"I'd offer to holocom him for you, but they're in the transitory mists."
"What's Ben doing in the transitory mists?" Mara demanded.
"Looking for Jaina and Zek," Jason answered. "They went to Terrafon to deliver a message for Tenel Ka and haven't returned yet. I sent the reconnaissance skiff to investigate, and Ben went along to see if he could help find them through the Force."
Mara's voice grew sharp. "Alone?"
"Of course not. As I told you, he's aboard a reconnaissance skiff with an excellent crew." A concerned frown came to Jason's face.
"What's wrong?"
"Didn't I warn you that Lumaya had returned?" Luke's tone was just as sharp as Mara's.
That I was worried she would come at me through him?
Yes, Jason said. But that was back on Coruscant. I don't think there's any reason to worry out here.
Why not? Mara demanded. Because you're sure Lumaya isn't interested in him?
Jason's frown turned indignant.
How would I know that?
Jason, we found Lumaya's apartment, Luke said. We know she's been working for GAG. Jason's eyes widened.
You might think you've been using her for your own ends, Luke continued, but you're fooling yourself. Lumaya always has an agenda of
working with GAG how?
Jason interrupted.
I certainly haven't seen her in uniform. Don't insult us by denying it, Mara said.
We know she came with you, Luke said. She left her apartment the same day the Anakin Solo left Coruscant.
You think she followed us?
Jason dropped into his chair and punched a button.
The Anakin Solo needs to remain here in support of Queen Mother Tenel Ka, but I'll take a skiff personally.
We'll be handling that ourselves, Mara said. Ben will be returning to Coruscant with us after this is finished.
Do you think that's wise?
The comlight on the arm of Jason's chair blinked on, but he ignored it and continued to speak to Mara.
It will only interrupt Ben's training, and if Lumaya is trying to get at him, she'll have an easier time stalking him on Coruscant.
Ben is done with GAG, Luke said. My decision is final. Jason's face fell.
Very well.
He deactivated the comm unit, then composed himself and continued.
There's a refueling depot at Roku, just outside the mists. You can rendezvous with him there.
Thank you,
Mara said. Jason nodded absent-mindedly, then said,
I hope you'll at least share the details of your investigation. If someone in my command is using Lumaya as an agent, I need to know.
Of course. Trissina Lobi had been trying to track Lumaya down for some time. Luke was giving a slightly altered version of events, in part because he wanted to learn how much Jason did know about Lumaya's relationship with GAG.
Apparently, she succeeded, because we found her body in Fellowship Plaza, the morning you left for Hapes.
Fellowship Plaza?
This time Jason's shock was real. Luke felt it through the Force.
Master Lobi is dead?
That's right, Mara said. She had already calmed the temple with the address of Lumaya's apartment.
Mara's account of events was even less accurate than Luke's, and far more distracting to Jason, who barely managed to reply with a murmured,
How unfortunate.
Luke was trying to decide how best to proceed, how best to keep Jason off guard so they could continue pressuring him, when the cabin door hissed open. Tenel Ka entered. Wearing an Elitrotech's flight suit, tailored tightly enough to suggest that her physical training remained as intense as ever. She crossed to Luke and Mara, her radiant smile at odds with the aura of tension and worry that hung about her in the Force.
Master Skywalker, thank you for coming.
She embraced Luke, then did the same with Mara.
You are unexpected, but very welcome. We can use all the help we can find.
Thank you, Your Majesty, Luke said. Unfortunately, we're here on a different matter.
But we do have a message that I'm sure will prove very useful, Mara added.
I hope it includes word of when the Alliance reinforcements will arrive.
The woman who said this was still in the cabin doorway, trailing half a dozen steps behind Tenel Ka. She was tall and pretentious-looking, with a long nose and a mouth turned permanently downward at the corners.
After lending so many of our fleets to the Galactic Alliance, our enemies have us at a terrible disadvantage.
Tenel Ka's face reddened, but she turned and politely motioned at the woman.
Master Skywalker, allow me to present my chamberlain, Lady Galny, younger sister to the Duchess Galny of Terraform.
Luke noted that the name was the same as the planet to which Ben had been sent, but merely bowed to Galny and did not remark on the coincidence.
Chief Omis and Admiral Nyathal are assembling a sizable defense fleet, he said. It should be able to depart Coruscant in a week.
A week? Lady Galny burst out. By then the usurpers will have mined the hyperspace lanes and be attacking Hapes itself.
There's no need to worry about the mines, Lady Galny, Mara said.
Alliance fleets are well equipped to deal with them. Once the defense fleet is underway, the usurpers won't delay it for long.
Of course they won't.
Tenelka's voice carried more confidence than Luke sensed in her through the Force.
Is that the message you mentioned?
Actually, no, Luke said. That message is for your ears alone. He threw a tactful glance in Lady Galny's direction, but she merely smirked and remained where she was.
I'm the Queen Mother's highest-ranking advisor. To perform my duties properly, I must hear whatever she hears.
Then I'm sure she'll fill you in later. Mara took the woman by the arm and started her toward the door.
But our instructions were explicit.
Jason rose. In that case, perhaps I better go as... No, you stay. Luke motioned him back into his chair. You need to see this more than Tenelka does. Jason raised his brow, but returned to his seat. Mara pushed Lady Galny out the door, with instructions to Sergeant Darb to have her escorted back to her quarters.
I'm sorry about that, Your Majesty, Luke said to Tenelka, but it's possible that someone close to you is a traitor.
Tenelka nodded.
Yes, I have been having premonitions of that myself, though I don't believe it's Lady Galny.
She smiled.
I can still sense when someone is lying to me, you know. She is a fool, but she is an honest one.
That doesn't mean she can be trusted with your secrets, Mara said, returning to Tenelka's side. Anyone with that much interest in another person's business won't keep it private.
I'm counting on that. With the Anakin Solo in orbit around Hapes, I need someone with me who will report to the rumor mongers that I have not been sleeping with her Jedi commander.
Tenelka glanced in Jason's direction and smiled again.
Besides, her sister, the Duchess Galny, is one of my most devoted nobles. It serves my purpose to cultivate the illusion of a special relationship with Lady Galny.
Mara used the Force to lower R2-D2 into the speaking arena, then said, Play Han's message. A rosy blur appeared over the projection pad and quickly resolved itself into an image of Han's face.
Listen up, kid.
Han's voice was low and raspy, as though he was trying to avoid being overheard.
I don't have long. We've got someone aboard who can't know about this, but I need you to relay this holo to Tenelka, and only to Tenelka. Someone close to her is a traitor, and it could go bad on us if this message got back to the wrong people.
The image changed to the profile of a beautiful Hapen woman with long brunette curls and high cheeks.
This is a woman named Morwan, but that might be an alias. She was a flight surgeon aboard the Kendall at the Battle of Kharibu. We're fairly sure she's in service to the Algray family of the Relifon Moons, and she's the contact between the Heritage Council. That's what the nobles behind the coup call themselves, and the assassin who escaped with us.
The woman's image changed to full face, and she looked even more striking, with full lips and soft slanted eyes.
We heard her tell the assassin to take care of Alana first.
The woman's image vanished, then Han's face reappeared, looking even more distressed than he had a moment earlier.
Luke, Tenelka needs to take this threat seriously. The assassin's name is Aurra Singh.
Luke was so shocked that he temporarily shut out Han's voice. He knew Aurra Singh's name from records of the old Jedi Order that he had gathered and studied over the years.
Think she might have been some sort of Jedi about 80 years ago,
Han was saying.
That's all we know. But there's something else. Keep an eye out for Alima Rar. We bumped into Jag Fel out at Telkor Station and...
Han stopped and glanced over his shoulder. Then his voice dropped to a whisper.
Gotta go. Tell Tenelka we're sorry about the mess in the palace. Gedjan was using us to set her up, and we didn't know.
The hologram vanished, leaving them to stand there in silence. Tenelka said,
Thank you for showing us this message. It is certainly easier to believe the Solos were being used than that they were trying to kill me.
Jason surprised Luke by nodding. And it explains some of those witness conflicts you mentioned, he said. If my parents were being used by Gedjan, once they realized what was happening, they would have tried to prevent the attack. Tenelka turned to Jason.
Obviously, this means we both need to cancel the orders regarding your parents.
Orders? Luke asked.
Capture and detain, Jason explained. He thought for a moment, then shook his head. But we can't. If they're right about a traitor in your court...
And that much seems obvious,
Tenelkaw interrupted. Then canceling the orders would give them away, Mara finished. You have to let the orders stand. Jason nodded. Anything else could be a death sentence.
Very well. They've proven quite adept at eluding us so far.
Tenelkaw fell silent for a moment, then said,
Now, we must consider what we do about Algray and her heritage council.
There's only one thing to do, Jason said.
Exactly.
Tenelkaw went to his side.
I must stay here to command the home fleet. With Aura Singh coming after Alana, however, I want her away from Hapes until this is over. She will be safer with you aboard the Anakin Solo.
Are you sure? Mara asked, alarmed. Jason may be going into battle.
And I will be,
Tenelkaw replied almost sharply.
Algray is not alone on this Heritage Council. When we move against her, the others will move against me, and Hapes will become a far more dangerous place for Alana than the Anakin Solo.
Aboard the Anakin Solo, inside the missile hold.
It was not the dark silence of the missile hold that Alima found so troubling, nor even all those cylinders packed with detonite and beradium and propellant. It was the cold. The caves of Ryloth, where she had spent the first years of her life, had been hot and dry and dusty, and the Gorog nest in which she had lived as a Killik joiner had been warm and humid and close. But the missile hold of the Anakin Solo was frigid. Even with a pair of bulky GAG utilities pulled over her own customary robes, her nose was numb. Her leku were tingling, her teeth chattering, her old wounds aching, and her breath rose in curtains of steam.
Alima, if you don't keep that glow rod on the cut, we're both going to be sorry.
Lumaya was kneeling in front of a missile rack, using her cybernetic hand to carefully run a fusion cutter down the nose cone welds of a beradium missile.
This isn't something I do every day.
You are not making us confident.
Alima shined the light on the missile just ahead of the fusion cutter's beam.
Why not tell Jason to have a trained technician remove the... whatever it is you're after?
The proton detonator charge,
Lumaya said.
And Jason can't know about this.
We should have guessed. But we have told you. Jason is important to the balance. We need him alive.
Lumaya continued to work, moving down the side of the missile toward the point of the initial cut.
I'm doing this to help Jason, not hurt him.
How?
Jason asked me to rendezvous with Ben at Roku Depot,
Lumaya said.
He's about to lead a task force to capture one of the coup leaders at the Relevon Moons, and he wants me to make certain Ben rejoins the Anakin Solo safely.
Alima frowned.
But Ben is aboard a reconnaissance skiff, she said.
They can find their way to the Relevon Moons. It sounds suspicious.
Lumaya sighed in exasperation.
It sounds suspicious because it is suspicious. Jason came to me as soon as the Skywalkers ended their little visit. I fear I've become a liability.
You think Jason is sending you into a trap?
I know he is. He's arranging a fight between me and Luke. If I kill Luke, it creates an opening for Jason to take over leadership of the Jedi Order. If Luke kills me, then it looks as though I've been stalking Ben all along. Luke will assume that his original fears were correct, and the veil of suspicion will be lifted off Jason.
What about Jason's destiny?
Alima asked.
Without you to guide him?
Jason has knowledge to complete his journey. All that remains for him is to make his sacrifice.
Then he hasn't?
Not yet, but he will.
We are not sure we like this plan,
Alima said.
If you are killed, his uncle will try to draw Jason back to the light side of the Force.
He won't be able to, Lumaya said. Because whether or not I return from this fight, Luke won't.
That is what the proton detonator is for?
Alima asked, finally comprehending Lumaya's plan.
A combat failsafe?
Lumaya nodded.
As you said, I might be killed.
Lumaya removed the proton charge from the missile, then pulled a black combat vest from her tool satchel and slipped the device into a chest pocket.
Very clever,
Alima said.
You win even if you lose.
It is the Sith way.
Lumaya scooted her tool satchel down the floor to the next missile on the rack.
Bring the light. We're running out of time.
We don't understand.
Alima began to have a sinking feeling, but she did as Lumaya asked and shined the light on the nose cone of the missile.
How are you going to wear two proton charges?
I'm not.
Lumaya reignited the fusion cutter, then looked up at Alima.
This one is for you.
Terra Farm.
Ribbons of smoke were still seeping from the hangar mouth and rising into the downpour, but the rest of Villa Solis had obviously burned out long before the rains came. A couple of proton bombs had reduced the site to a smear of rubble and melted stone, leaving only a few ghostly foundation circles to mark where the habitation domes had once stood. To Ben's surprise, he felt only a hint of death in the Force. Either the attack had occurred a very long time ago, which seemed unlikely given the fumes still rising from the hangar, or very few people had died in it. The lilting voice of the skiff's pilot and commander, a Duros junior lieutenant named Beta Ioli, came over Ben's headset, which he and the rest of the crew were wearing to muffle the roar of the oversized engines.
Something bad happened here. Chief, you picking up anything?
Negative, ma'am.
Sonogo replied. A Bith chief petty officer who had been in the Space Navy since before Ben was born sat 3 meters back in the rover's cramped cabin, operating the Snoop Station, used to locate and evaluate enemy targets.
There aren't any signals originating within 300 kilometers, but we do have a bogey squadron headed our way from Wero Field.
My tills?
Ioli asked.
Negative. Looks more like headhunters.
Headhunters?
Ioli grunted.
You're kidding.
The planetary militia still uses headhunters, Ben said. They're probably curious about us.
Nobody sends 12 fighters on a look and report,
Sonogo repeated.
That's an attack squadron.
Can't blame them for being cautious. Somebody did just lever their Duchess Palace. Identify us and see if they know what happened.
After the rover had descended to an altitude of 200 meters, Ioli circled around to the front of the ruins, where a cluster of flooded craters sat in what had once been the villa's foreyard. Ben suddenly experienced a sensation of frustration, so faint and muted that he thought at first he might be imagining it.
They were here, he said.
Who?
Sonogo demanded over the headset.
Be precise, son.
Sorry, Ben said. Jaina and Zek, those craters were a big problem for them.
I'll say.
Tanogo's voice was sarcastic.
Getting blasted back to your molecules is always a big problem.
Chief.
Ioli brought the skiff's nose up and wheeled around to land.
That's his cousin you're talking about.
It's okay. Death isn't what I'm sensing,
Ben said. As they swung back toward the villa ruins, the feeling of frustration and anger began to grow weaker.
Turn back to our old heading, Lieutenant. I think that's the way we need to go.
Ioli started to swing the skiff back around. Ben closed his eyes and pictured Jaina's face, at the same time focusing his attention on the frustration he felt in the Force. The ripples grew stronger, almost instantly, striking him more noticeably from a direction about 20 degrees to their starboard. Without opening his eyes, he pointed.
That way.
Ioli hesitated for only an instant before swinging the craft in the direction he indicated.
Ben extended his Force awareness as far as he could in that direction, picturing Jaina in his mind, and trying to touch her through the Force. Then, suddenly, she was there.